produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Wednesday, April 23rd, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Don't forget to call your Congress and tell them to support H.R. 5842 and H.R. 5843 to end DEA raids in medical marijuana states and to legalize the personal possession of marijuana. The number is 202-224-3121. If you have a product that you would like to market to the cannabis community, you can advertise on the Daily Audio Stash. Your ad will be focused on exactly the customer base you're seeking out, the thousands of responsible cannabis consumers who download and listen to this show. Our listeners are educated consumers who want to support the businesses that support the growing truth about cannabis, and we deliver the advertising freedom you won't find on radio, TV, or print ads. To advertise on the Daily Audio Stash, send us an email at stash@normal.org. Wednesday is Cannabis Science Day on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're separating the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Today, Dr. Mitch and I discuss the Chicago Tribune's characterization of aggression in marijuana smokers and the latest study to show marijuana helps treat neuropathic pain. Cannabis Carry brings our musical break this Hemp Day Hump Day with Reed Fole, a singer-songwriter out of Boulder, Colorado. Reed's latest album is called Stoned Beautiful, and we've got the title track for you. Then we wrap things up with Matt Simon from the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy with an update on the New Hampshire decrim bill that's hit some snags in the Senate. So welcome to the show. Grab your best glass and sit back with your favorite strain. This is your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Well, we're still following the fallout from the 420 weekend. Lots of stories being published in the newspapers. We look to Santa Cruz, California for this next story. Police: pot smoking event in the UC Santa Cruz Meadow was a moral slap in the face. For those who arrest people who use, abuse, or sell drugs, Sunday's pot smoking festival at UC Santa Cruz was a, quote, moral slap in the face to the cause, end quote, said Rich Westfall, task force commander with the Santa Cruz County Narcotics Enforcement Team. Despite efforts by the university to control access to the campus, thousands of people, many of them students from UC Santa Cruz and other California colleges, gathered at Porter Meadow to commemorate the so-called 420 Cannabis Culture Holiday. UC Santa Cruz's once student-only gathering to smoke marijuana is now known nationally. It has grown to 5,000 people strong over the years, its popularity attributed to articles published in high-profile magazines like Rolling Stone and High Times magazine, along with newer forms of social media like YouTube. Though smoking pot is illegal, no one was arrested at the weed-smoking exhibition that unfolded on Sunday. Yep, and that's because Santa Cruz is one of the cities that has voted to make enforcement of marijuana laws the lowest priority for police. You know, as I scan the news reports of 420, I'm finding very few arrests and no reports of violence or disruptive antisocial behavior. Most police understand that marijuana smokers are not a threat to ordered society. Ask any cop whether he or she would like to try to control 5,000 marijuana smokers or 5,000 beer drinkers in public. Like other articles, this one tries to scare the reader by bringing up the two shibboleths still trotted out by drug warriors, the driving while stoned and the what about the children. Concerned citizens called to wonder why police weren't arresting attendees for DUI as they left the gathering, and some teenagers were able to get into the gathering. Well, for the former, could it be that most police recognize that a couple of puffs on a joint isn't the biggest traffic danger in the world? Or perhaps the people who drove away didn't show any signs of driving impairment. Look, until taxi cabs and buses are the only vehicles I see entering or leaving bar parking lots, I think our police have far more drunk drivers to worry about than stone drivers cruising a little too slow, missing their freeway exit, or idling at the in-and-out drive-through window. As for the latter, whether it is alcohol or marijuana, teenagers will get a hold of it. Marijuana is far less harmful. But if this were an outdoor microbrew festival, the legality of beer lets security and police set up restricted areas with checks for ID and sometimes ID wristbands. You don't see any spontaneous open-air beer festivals popping up nationwide. Since it's legal, we can do a better job of keeping the minors out. Here's another post-420 story, this time from up in Niagara Falls, Canada. Hundreds rally for legalized marijuana on Highway 420. Honking car horns coming from vehicles as they passed a parquet near Highway 420 got a crowd of 200 cheering in solidarity. With the smell of ganja in the air Sunday, people rallied to show their support for the legalization of marijuana at the 420 Marijuana March, a peaceful protest aimed at showcasing the need to abolish marijuana prohibition. With similar demonstrations in Toronto and Hamilton that day, marijuana enthusiasts marched down Victoria Avenue and down Clifton Hill to Queen Victoria Park, with their protest signs and flags held high, all while lighting up a joint in the process. One of the supporters at the rally was Derek Pedro, who is a legalized user of marijuana. Suffering from migraine headaches, muscle spasms, and joint pain, Pedro says marijuana has reduced his suffering. Pedro said, quote, "I need to get high to feel medicated, but everywhere I go, I feel like I need to hide myself to smoke. I feel the public doesn't understand that there are positives to marijuana use. Prohibition gives it a bad name," end quote. Allison Murden, who represents the group Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a nonprofit educational group whose mandate is to lower incidence of death, disease, crime, and addiction through ending prohibition, has suffered from symptoms of chronic multiple sclerosis. The symptoms include extreme facial pain and the need to walk with a cane. Murden said marijuana helps her get through the pain and has reduced the number of painkillers she takes each day. Murden said, quote, "Prohibition doesn't work. If it was legalized, people wouldn't be looking at the streets to find it. Something has to be done to change the laws. In my perfect world, all drugs should be legal," end quote. Now there's a sentence that'll scare your average person. All drugs should be legal. To most people, that conjures up a society gone berserk, with trippin' space cadets and zombie junkies, thievin' tweakers, and utter chaos in the streets. "We can't legalize drugs," they protest, "because that would encourage people to do drugs." Well, I've got news for them. Drugs require no encouragement. People are already doing drugs, even though they are illegal. The chaos in the streets is already here, and most of it is a direct result of the prohibition, not the drugs. It's funny to me how the drug warriors see prohibition, the lack of laws controlling drugs, as a method of control, and they see regulation, taxes and laws to control drugs, as a recipe for disaster. Our drug war is based on the wrong metrics, and those are A, how many people are using drugs, and B, how much drugs are they using. Well, both measures are irrelevant. If half of all North Americans lit up a joint every day for the next month, would that be bad? By the drug war metrics, yes. But what would the results be from that massive smoke-in? Are there fewer crimes? Less drunk driving? Fewer prescriptions for toxic pharmaceuticals? a reduction in violence, a windfall for snack manufacturers. See, it's not about how many people or how much drugs that we should worry about. It's the harm that does or does not result from the drugs. And with marijuana, most people know that there is little societal harm, if any, from the responsible adult use of marijuana. Even those who think marijuana is harmful believe that harm is pretty much reserved for the marijuana user, and rarely believe that it's causing more harm than alcohol or nicotine. Now we get us some good news from an unlikely source, the suburbs of Chicago. Sugar Grove, Illinois, loosens up its marijuana law. In an unusual move in the Fox Valley, village police plan to start writing tickets, instead of making arrests, for first-timers caught with small amounts of marijuana. Police Chief Bradley Saar said the change will keep officers from spending long hours in court on minor drug charges and also allow those who slip up just once to keep their records clean. He said, quote, "This is a warning on steroids," end quote. Tickets for first-time marijuana possession or drug paraphernalia possession will be $200. Saar said those fines were in line with the fees judges typically hand down in court. Both marijuana and paraphernalia possession are state violations, but towns can change those to town ordinances if they want, said Kane County State's Attorney John Barsanti. However, village ordinances cannot carry any jail time, only fines. Well, look, over 70% of Americans favor fine-only penalties for marijuana use. Sugar Grove is just making a sensible change to best use their limited police resources. Every marijuana arrest means taking an officer off the streets for paperwork, booking, and testifying against someone who, aside from smoking marijuana, is probably a decent, hard-working, productive citizen.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Well, we're joined today, as we are every Wednesday, by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who is Associate Professor for Psychology at State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Earlywine, thanks for joining us again today.
Oh, it's a pleasure being on the show.
Well, we had all sorts of 420 celebrations that took place last weekend. Anything take place up there at the university?
Oh, in fact, there were all kinds of underground events as well as some more formal celebrations of 420. It was a real pleasure to see. What a big weekend it was here.
Yeah, as I was looking through them, there was, I guess the University of Colorado has the real big one where they have about 10,000 people show up for that one. And no arrests. I was reading, you know, a lot of these reports, and it seems to be that the police are fairly easygoing on the people celebrating 420.
I even saw quite a bit of television coverage covering that same idea, that essentially this is a time when folks know that nobody's really out there to do anything but make a simple statement. There's no risk for aggression or hostility or outrageous dealing of hard drugs or anything like that, that this was really an event that should become something that is a good sign for things to come.
Well, speaking of that, we were looking at this story that came out of the Chicago Tribune. There was a lot of, it seemed in a lot of newspapers, and like you said, on television, I saw this on MSNBC, where they talked about 420 being a cultural touchstone and a new kind of stoner holiday. And the Tribune put out this thing called The 10 Things You Didn't Know About Pot. And as a typical top 10 list about things like, you know, what Billy Carter, the president's, Jimmy Carter's brother, once said about pot or jazz musicians using pot and so on. But number two here I thought was quite interesting. You were speaking of aggression, and I'll just read this number two one. It says, marijuana is known for its mellowing effect, but it has fueled many warriors in history. The word assassin is believed to come from the hashish taken a millennium ago by Arab killers called the hashashin or hashish eaters, though some historians doubt they were under the influence while on their missions. Mexican bandit Pancho Villa's henchmen were pot smokers, and some believe Zulu fighters in South Africa were high on daga, a.k.a. marijuana, when they attacked the Boers in the Blood River in 1838. The Zulus lost 3,000 fighters. Talk about a buzzkill. any truth to any of that whatsoever?
as it turns out, there's a number of misunderstandings inherent in this one point, and I don't want to rib the Tribune too much because I really like that paper. Some of my college pals work for the Chicago Tribune, and I feel like they're usually quick to give the cannabis movement a very fair shake. But this one issue is one that's near and dear to my heart because I feel like it sends kind of a curious message to folks who don't understand our mission. Marijuana does not cause aggression. And we have literally tons of laboratory evidence to show this now. And there's some confusion about this etymology of assassin that has actually been pretty well cleared up since 1970. Don Casto, you know, when most of our listeners were probably fetuses, published a thing in British Journal of Addiction just walking through how Hassan was this guy in Eastern country at the time who had some very devoted followers who often committed murder in order to help him stay in political power. And some folks think that actually Hashashin is follower of Hassan, somebody who is one of this guy's devotees and who was willing to commit murder for that reason. Another group suggested that maybe they used cannabis to say, look, this is how wonderful things are going to be in heaven for you if you follow this guy. But nobody ever actually said this was something that was going to incite aggression. In fact, Taylor has some data from the mid-1980s where people came in and actually got high and then were provoked by the experimenters. The experimenters did things like take money away from them or take points away from them or do other irritating things, and they still were not as aggressive as the guys who smoked placebo. And Tom Denson, who's now in Australia, one of my students, and I have a paper coming out later this year showing that any link between marijuana use and aggression in people who are marijuana users, as soon as you take out the use of alcohol and hard drugs, that link disappears. And in fact, my lab has shown time and again that alcohol is probably the drug that is most likely to increase aggression of all the drugs known to humankind. So let's sort of keep that in mind when people start spreading these rumors about assassins.
Yeah, I'm glad that you bring all that up. I mean, so many of us know that just anecdotally. I can't think of a more mellow, peaceful, loving group of people than any group of stoners that I've ever been around. You know, the idea that they'd be aggressive just seems to fly in all the face of common sense.
Oh, my friend Jack Cole of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition has said time and again, if police get a call and hear there's a bunch of people drinking and they have to go visit, they're much more apprehensive than if they hear, you got to go look at this bunch of people who've all been smoking marijuana.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from law enforcement as well. Now, another story that I thought we ought to run by you, Dr. Earlywine, since you know so much about these medical studies. This one just came out of the University of California at Davis, and they're publishing this in the Journal of Pain. And apparently this has shown that they're getting significant relief of neuropathic pain from the use of THC. So this just confirms what we've learned in previous studies, correct?
It's beautiful to see this in a separate lab setting, though. So now nobody can say, oh, it's just this one lab that's shown THC has analgesic effects. And we've seen from studies earlier this year that the effects seem to really vary with dose. So folks who say, oh, I tried cannabis and it actually made my pain worse, probably either had not enough or too much and didn't have that correct window. But we now have literally really nice randomized clinical trials where THC and placebo have been compared, and the pain reduction has been meaningful and significant. But it, especially for this neuropathic pain, which is a real hassle and very, very difficult to treat with some of our other standard pain meds. So the opiates don't seem to do particularly well with it. Our standard analgesics like aspirin or ibuprofen and things like that don't seem to do particularly well. So it's reassuring to see that THC can give these folks a chance. And I think it's easy for us, if we're not in pain, to underestimate how debilitating some of this stuff can be. The neuropathic pain is with you day and night, and that makes your sleep messed up, and then suddenly you're irritable the next day, and then, of course, with less sleep, you're more sensitive to your pain, and it's a really horrible downward spiral. But with THC as an opportunity to treat this, you can imagine somebody's quality of life really improves.
Well, yeah, we would hope so. And there's so many patients in the medical marijuana states that are making a benefit out of the use of cannabis for chronic pain. In just about every state, it's the number one reason why people are getting medical marijuana cards.
It's showing up time and again.
Now, there was one last thing I had noticed that had come across a couple of email exchanges, and this was a study, apparently a pretty new study here by Morgan, and this had to do with taking a look at the opposing actions of THC, which most people will know is the psychoactive component of marijuana, and then another component that doesn't get a lot of play, which is the cannabidiol. And I was wondering if you could just tell folks just a little bit about the differences and what they're finding.
This is an intriguing study, a part of a whole series of investigations about cannabidiol. Cannabidiol seems to be the component of the plant that creates the more mellow aspects. It's been used successfully as a treatment for insomnia. It seems to have some anti-anxiety effects, and it seems to counteract some of the intense, trippy, almost hallucinatory effects of THC. And as you notice, the plant that grows in nature, there's often a really nice balance between cannabidiol and THC. But, you know, different folks for different reasons have bred different strains to have more of one or more of the other. Well, a lot of the folks who are concerned about THC creating these hallucinatory or psychotic-like effects actually would find that if cannabidiol were part of the plant as well, those things are extremely unlikely. This also supports some of the complaints I get from medical users of Marinol who say, you know, they take Marinol and it seems like it ought to work because it's got THC in it, but it's just completely debilitating. They say I'm completely retarded, I can't follow a linear argument, and it's just insane, and then if I lower the dose, I don't get relief of my symptoms. In fact, part of the plant's beauty is it's got the cannabidiol in there with the THC. If the cannabidiol is combating some of the thought distortion that's associated with too much THC, then suddenly they can alleviate their symptoms and still function perfectly well and, you know, have a nice work-filled, fulfilling life.
Well, this is another, you know, aspect of prohibition that makes things so difficult is in a regulated and taxed market, we might have a situation where people would be experimenting more with the different balances of the cannabidiol to the THC to create different brands and different effects, I'd imagine.
Well, and in the UK, GW Pharmaceuticals has done just that, and they're finding the extracts that are primarily cannabidiol have very different effects from the ones that have THC and cannabidiol combined.
Well, it's exciting research, and we look forward to getting some more information out of that. We'll keep on top of that. And Dr. Earlywine, thanks again for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Russ.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join Normal at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join Normal today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, it's time for our musical break, Stashers. Today, we're sending you all a love note to tell you that you are stoned beautiful with today's musical hit from songwriter Reed Fohl. You might already know Reed as the lead singer of the Boulder, Colorado-based jam band Acoustic Junction, which played many shows in the 1990s. Reed has always been a songwriter, and now that he has embraced his solo career, we get to enjoy his best work with truthful lyrics, intricate guitar work, and songs that speak to the poet in all of us. Reed has opened up for a number of well-known artists, including Taj Mahal, Patti Griffin, Dave Matthews, and most recently on several shows with Ray LaMontagne. We haven't heard the last from this amazing songwriter. This is the title track of his latest album. It's Reed Fohl with Stoned Beautiful.
Will I land? Come down from the clouds. Put my feet on the ground. Step out of this dream. Seems so far away from where I am today, and I don't care what people say, I'm just living day to day. Will I land and come down? my feet on the ground, step out of this dream.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
We're joined once again by Matt Simon, the Executive Director of the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy. You can learn more about them at nhcommonsense.org. Matt's been leading the support of a bill in New Hampshire that would decriminalize the personal possession of marijuana up to 1/4 ounce by responsible adults, leading to a fine only rather than arrest and prosecution. Matt, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Hi, Russ. It's great to be back on.
You just had your hearing in the Senate that took place on the 22nd. What was the results of that hearing?
Well, the result of the hearing was that everybody went home and had dinner. It was a long day, I'm sure, for all the senators who were in hearings all day. We had a very late start. The hearing before us dragged on for like an hour. It was some death penalty bill that they were listening to. And by the time we finally got in there, everybody on the Senate committee was totally exhausted. But they listened to us for, well over an hour. And we presented our case like we did in the House. Our opponents presented their arguments against us, and at the end of the day, everybody went home and had dinner. We won't know what their decision is on the bill until probably next week would be a good guess.
Now, you're facing a kind of uphill battle there in New Hampshire because it's been reported that your Democratic governor, John Lynch, is opposed to the bill and will veto it, even if it gets past the Senate. And then the Senate is controlled by a Democrat, Majority Leader Joseph Foster, who is trying to squash the bill. So what have you heard from the governor's office recently about the bill?
Within minutes of the bill passing the House, his office released a statement saying that he would veto it if it got to his desk, that it sends exactly the wrong message to kids, and apparently they're not looking at poll numbers, because Democrats supported this bill by a wide majority, and even Republicans were dead split on it. But the reaction, people didn't understand what we were doing. They heard the word decriminalization, they thought it was legalization, they think we're turning New Hampshire into Amsterdam overnight, and people were scared of that sort of thing. So we got this reaction to the House vote, a veto threat from the governor. The Senate majority leader said it was dead on arrival in the Senate, and he was supposed to be our committee chair. He walked in, smiled at everybody, and handed the gavel to the vice chair and walked out. So we had the hearing without him. It was really quite an interesting day.
Now, this bill was proposed by Jeffrey Fontas and Andrew Edwards, who are first-term representatives in the New Hampshire House, also from Nashua. And apparently their hometown newspaper, the Nashua Telegraph, has been following their activities. According to a recent article here, it says they were trying to propose an amendment that would restrict this bill, which is already only 1/4 ounce, that would restrict this bill just to first-time offenders. Any chance of that making any difference?
It's not likely that the Senate's going to respond strongly to that. It does tailor the bill more to the arguments that they've been making all along. Now, Representative Faunus and Representative Edwards are both 21 years of age. That's something that may not have gotten out on this. These guys ran for the State House when they were 19 and got elected, and they wanted to give their generation a voice and prove that you can go into politics and do things like this and actually change the system. And they've really just done a great job being professional and gaining the respect of their colleagues over their time in the legislature to make this it possible for us to even get this far with this kind of bill. But they've focused on the effect on students losing their financial aid and all the other factors that affect young people in particular. And by watering
down the bill even more to only apply to first offenders. That's just one more attempt to show that they're willing to play politics with the Senate, which by all appearances isn't willing to play politics, not this year.
It's interesting you mention the part about the students losing their aid. This article in the Nashua Telegraph talks about how the Attorney General's office spoke out against the bill. One of their spokespeople, Karen Eckel, spoke out against it, saying that the college aid loss is a federal law, and this wouldn't change anything for those New Hampshire students. How can we go about debunking that message?
Well, it's more confusing and convoluted the more you get into it. I've been reluctant to rely on the financial aid argument too much for a decriminalization bill, simply because I think obviously Congress should repeal that provision of the Higher Education Act tomorrow, and then what decrim argument are we left with if that's the only argument we use? You know, to me, I've talked about the threat of incarceration. There's no reason we should have the threat of incarceration on the books for simple possession when 11 other states don't and haven't in decades, and these problems don't happen. So, you know, that is something that was just the House latched onto that argument, and it's been a convoluted, confusing discussion ever since. But the Attorney General's office is trying to confuse people as much as possible and assure them that the unintended consequences of marijuana prohibition are far less than what we say, and she tried to do that yesterday. I don't know if it worked or not.
Well, it seems like a disingenuous smokescreen here. While it's true that New Hampshire's bill wouldn't change the federal aid elimination penalty, if the state and local police in New Hampshire were arresting and convicting fewer people, they wouldn't be losing their aid.
Absolutely right. That ought to be clear to people who are looking at this in a clear manner, but you know, drug warriors don't want us to look at the issue in a clear manner. That's kind of been the case all along.
Absolutely true. So what is the next step for the bill? Will it be heard again at a later session?
No, I'm happy to say that we're done with hearings for the year. There will be an executive session of the Senate committee, and they will do what they're going to do. There's some chance that they could, they could vote unanimously against it and send it to the full Senate for them to vote probably to kill it, or they could do something like amend the bill into something like a study committee that would study the issue kind of in the off season, and that would be kind of a compromise that might have some, you know, productive value to it to move the conversation forward in a good way. But you know, obviously we want them to pass the bill, and it looks like they're not going to do it. So not much we can do except contact our senators and hope they do the right thing.
That's right. And we have to remember that these battles are just a long part of the overall war against prohibition. It's not going to happen in just one bill or one issue at a time. These have to take time to build up support.
That's absolutely the case, Russ. This kind of thing comes up every year, every couple of years in the House. It never gets to the Senate. And this is the first time the Senate's had to listen to this. So they're listening. And in an election year, they're nervous about the fact that they're listening. But we are setting ourselves up for the next year and the year after that. You can't end marijuana prohibition overnight, and we're turning the tide against it.
Well, that's excellent. We want to encourage everyone to get involved. Check out nhcommonsense.org, and you can learn more about the bills and how you can help to end adult marijuana prohibition up in the Granite State. Thanks for joining us, Matt Simon, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy.
Hey, thanks, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. for everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a cannabis quote from Richard Nixon, the former president. Quote, soft-headed psychiatrists who work in places like the National Institute for Mental Health favor marijuana because they're probably all on the stuff themselves. End quote. Yeah, Tricky Dick Nixon, the author of The War on Drugs, just figures that everybody who's for the ending of drug prohibition must be on drugs. Now, you must be on drugs if you think that prohibition is something that actually works. It's been proven time and time again to be a failure. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here on The Stash. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews that you can use. Take care of each other, tokers.